ebook publishers and marketing services company, Just Imagine It, Inc. presents... Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views.
Today, Chrissy McIntyre talks to an accidental pervert in New York. Audi Award winner Adele Park has a quirky story, and the inside scoop about the John Edwards affair is served in our audiobook feature. Right after the news, you want to know.
I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Lucia Sherman.
And I'm Maya Seligman. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. Originally, Russell Brand's first foray into American television was going to be called Strangely Uplifting. But instead, the show that premieres on FX and FX Canada is called Brand X with Russell Brand. Too bad, because Strangely Uplifting was exactly how the tall, mop-haired Brit struck the media earlier this year at the most recent press tour in LA. This is not to say his late-night series won't be uplifting or that it will or won't be peppered with salty X-rated content. In fact, Brand made no effort to censor himself at his lively press session. So Brand and executive producer Troy Miller, who actually did Flight of the Conchords,
Great show. Flight of the Conchords. Wasn't that was on HBO?
Yeah, really fun.
Yeah.
That was a good show.
Yeah, they're from New Zealand.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Really?
I always thought they were British or Australian, but they're from New Zealand.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Some of their songs are so entertaining. Like, not only is it great music, but it makes me laugh.
We like that.
Yeah.
Well, they weren't exactly sure what the Brand X with Russell Brand series would actually look like once it hit the air. Sensing critics were still puzzled about what his show would be like, Brand offered this helpful tip. "I'm not from here, am I?" That's what he said. I wish I could do a British accent, because then I could help our listeners know a little bit more about.
You know, Russell Brand is, he's quite famous now. Because of his movies, Get Him to the Greek and Forgetting Sarah Marshall. But, he is, of course, from England. But it's funny because he was extremely popular in the UK. And then when he married, Katy Perry, American princess, he just blew up all over the place.
Yeah, he did.
Although a lot of people do think he comes from another planet.
But an interesting planet.
Yeah, Brand X, I guess.
Right. Well, the 37-year-old started out doing stand-up comedy in the UK in 2000, and he became known for one-man shows where he was hilariously candid about his former drug addictions. And while he seemed at least over-caffeinated during that last FX press conference, he claims to keep his addictive personality firmly in check these days. And you guys want to know what he claims does it?
What?
Transcendental meditation.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I thought that was, I didn't even know that before.
He and who was that director? Twin Peaks director, what's his name?
Oh, David Lynch.
Yeah. He's a big transcendental meditation
As are
aficionado.
The Beach Boys.
Really?
Yeah, they were. They had a very strong problem with the drugs and addiction, and they all, when they got off of drugs, claimed that they got off through transcendental meditation. They hired special people to come and teach them how to do it. They went to Hawaii. They lived there for 2 years. They really committed to it.
No, that's inspiring.
Wow. Yeah.
Calm the mind.
Not that he's in America to pass judgment, Brand insists. "This country has been incredibly generous and kind to me," he said. "So it's not like a finger-pointing exercise. Many of the aspects of American culture that came under the greatest criticism from abroad are certainly not a peninsula that a British person could arrogantly judge from, given that we did our own fair share of colonialism, didn't we?
Yeah. Oh.
I think we continue to this day.
Yeah.
Well, he pointed out that he doesn't see himself in that role as a malevolent jester attacking people who are already being attacked. What he says is, all I want is for people to feel better than they do now. And as long as I stay in alignment with that, then I'm served by great forces.
You know, that's a great quote, you know, and it really comes down to, I like his thinking on that, that, you know, hey, you know, as long as, you know, people are getting positive out of my show, you know, and they're enjoying it, then, you know, yeah, I'll stick with it. You know, I'm not here to preach or tell you, you know, to follow my philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just here to tell you jokes, man.
I love how he brings that together. He can be really wild and cocky and X-rated, and then he can also bring it to our focus of what he's really talking about.
Yeah. A nice dichotomy of the irreverent and a centeredness, I guess.
Yeah, you know, and I would imagine.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense because, you know, given his challenges with drug addiction, which he writes about in his book, it was called My Bookie Wookie.
I mean, really?
Yeah, he was a number one seller in all throughout Europe and on the, in here in America, the New York Times bestseller list. And, you know, given all that, you know, and then. His just being, you know, I'm a funny man. You know, when I first heard about Russell Brand, I didn't hear about him on MTV, although I'm familiar that he's been on there. But and it wasn't in the movies, you know, like Forgetting Sarah Marshall or Get Him to the Greek or anything like that. I heard him on the BBC radio, and he was interviewing Noel Gallagher from Oasis. And I was like, this guy is hysterical, man. And then years later, he was. I went to see the movie Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and he happened to be in it. And I didn't know who he was, and he wasn't a big star. And then he just went, you know, huge from there.
You know, it's so interesting. I didn't know you were a follower of the BBC. I am a personal follower. I get my news from the BBC. I feel that they're middle of the road. You know, they're. I don't think they're biased. And so and you like the radio, and there we go.
Yeah, I like the BBC radio. It's huge. It's got, you know, and a huge history behind it, too. But it was, yeah, I like listening to some of the shows are hysterical. Some of the shows, I like a lot of British things and the like Graham Norton and things like that.
Oh, we love British humor, don't we, Charlie?
Yeah. And, you know, matter of fact, a little side note on Russell Brand, he was actually kicked off the BBC radio.
Oh, what did he do?
Yeah, he made a prank phone call to the prime minister. And the call went through because it came through from the BBC studios.
Oh, my
gosh. And he did a thing on with the prime minister. And the Brits are, like, you know, hysterically funny and stuff like that. But they also have this, like, strict code about what's proper and what's not. And hence, it's not proper for a radio show to call the prime minister. Mr. Brand had to go.
Was it recorded, though?
I want to hear it was recorded. It was recorded. It went out. And the BBC, Russell Brand went on and he apologized. And he said it was really wrong for me to do. It was rude. And they said, that's, you know, that's great, but, you know, you got to go.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to see his new show, Brand X with Russell Brand, it just premiered and it plays on Thursdays at 11 p.m. on the FX networks.
Great. You know, I caught a bit of it this last Thursday, and he was funny. He just comes out into the audience, you know, and he does a little bit of his stand-up routine, and then he has, you know, guests on, and it's kind of, you know, it's you're either going to think it's really, really funny, you know, or you're going to think it's incredibly boring because
you don't
get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wish him luck.
I wish him well with the show as well. And I also really look forward to, I haven't seen it yet, but I really want to see his new movie that he's in with Tom Cruise. Rock of Ages. With, like, everyone who's in there.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise, you know, Alec Baldwin. Russell Brand.
Right.
I've seen the previews for it all.
Catherine Zeta-Jones. Yeah.
It looks great.
Juliana Huff. Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, Tom Cruise. Great movie, you know, premiere, but, you know, he's apparently had a rough week.
He's been in the news.
Yeah, he's been in the news. It's very sad. For a number of people, but I guess
maybe we should share with the listeners what we're talking about if they don't.
Yeah,
know.
Katie Holmes filed for divorce with Tom Cruise yesterday.
Yeah. And that came out of left field. I didn't see that one coming.
Me neither.
I don't think Tom Cruise did either.
I know. It's always, you know, very sad, and especially sad for the children involved in a divorce. But
maybe it'll be smooth.
Hopefully. I wish them all the best. Yeah. And
you know what? It kind of strikes me, not necessarily funny, but it almost parodies the movie, if you remember the movie Jerry Maguire. How Tom Cruise's character, Jerry Maguire, in the movie is having problems with women. They all break up with them. Then he's like, that's okay, we'll be good friends. And the crux of the movie is that, you know, he can always be good friends with women, but he can never commit to one, you know. And this seems to be paralleled in his real life.
Yeah. But I think, aren't he and Nicole Kidman good friends still?
That's the whole point, Lucia, is that, you know, he's saying, like, I'm always great friends with all my exes.
I know.
Okay, great.
I can relate to that, you know, because, you know, I'm great friends with my ex-wife. You know, we go to Christmas parties together and we all have the children there and everything like that, you know, it's just...
And I know that, and I think that's very healthy.
It is healthy.
I think it's terrific.
You know, and it's funny, you know, one of my exes, Jeannie is her name, she made this hysterical comment once to one of my brothers. They said, you know, you guys all get along so well. And she goes, yeah, you know, I gave him a shot at the title. He just couldn't go the distance.
And speaking of titles, Pixar's new movie Brave is a beautiful fairy tale about family, independence, and growing up for children and grown-ups alike. Finding Nemo was Pixar's story of a father and son losing and then finding one another again. Brave is a very different film, but in many ways is a similar story, but only this time it's the story of a mother and daughter losing and then finding one another again, though both are changed. Celtic and magical, Brave gets everything, or nearly everything, just about perfect. The music, animation, writing, and acting are all superb. It's not Pixar's funniest film, but the laughs are well-earned and well-placed. Brave, like so many of Pixar's films, refuses to be just a kid's movie, nor does it merely try to appeal to audiences of all ages. The film is relentless in its exploration of grown-up themes as any of its predecessors, but only this time, and for the first time, the protagonist is a girl. Ooh, we like that, Maya, don't we?
Oh, definitely. I was excited to see that.
I was, too. And the central conflict revolves not merely around generational or societal frictions. It specifically focuses on gender roles and the tension between our duty to ourselves as individuals and to society at large. Pride and stubbornness are more of the villains of the story than any witch or demon bear, and the easy solutions in so many other films about strong-willed princesses simply don't exist. No magic to save the Little Mermaid, no spell to be broken and make the beast man again, no dashing prince or magic lamp to make everything all right in the end. While some reviewers have complained that the film lacks the heart of other Pixar pictures, it is easily as heartfelt and touching as the rest, and more so than some. I think we are prone to look back at past films with rosy-tinted glasses to compare everything through our lens of nostalgia. This is a shame, because Brave is a terrific film and stands tall on its own merits. I haven't seen it. Have you?
No, you know what? I haven't seen it, and I will be seeing it 4th of July week. I am flying to California, and I have two daughters, Amy and Sarah, that are seven and eight. And oh my gosh, they're like, well, we need to see it. We want to take our friends, and mom wants to see it, and it's in 3D, and you know, and it's just like, you know, yeah, they've been waiting for it to come out for quite a while. I have seen the trailer.
It looks great. Yeah.
It does look great.
It looks great.
Like you know, you ladies are talking about it. You know, it's just like, you know, the you know, it's like, you know, Brave is from the trailers. It's all about you know, a dad, you know, who picks out the husband for his little girl.
Right.
He has a contest.
Yes.
And she doesn't go for it.
My kind of girl.
Well, Charlie, let us know how your daughters like it.
I will. I definitely will. You know, Pixar, you know, and I'm very near and dear to my heart. always comes up with some great artistic innovations. They're always on the cutting edge, you know, whether it's Finding Nemo, Toy Story, you know, the Brave, Cars. You know, they're always coming up with something a little bit different, you know, and it seems like, you know, that their artists are, you know, really enthusiastic about what they do. You know, passionate about their craft. Yeah, I mean, you know, artists seems to have this enthusiasm that just overspills into their personal life. Wouldn't you agree, Maya?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and speaking of art, you know, President Obama seems to have won the art world support. Despite the introduction of policies that have alienated sections of the art lobby, it looks as though key figures in the U.S. art world will once again step up to back President Barack Obama as their candidate in the presidential race this year. So, you know, I'd like to hear a little bit more about that because, you know, I'm curious, you know, as to why they always seem to back the cool guy, you know?
Yeah, well,
the cool guy.
There's a New York art dealer, Paula Cooper, and back in February 2008, she hosted a fundraising event at her gallery. And now, 6 months before the next presidential election, the gallerist is again throwing her considerable weight behind the Democratic candidate. And as Cooper says, she thinks everyone is terrified.
Terrified.
Yes.
I didn't even know she had a
Whoa, that's a strong word.
It is. But she says it's a factor that she believes will make the artists and writers for Obama event.
You know, Maya, you know, I mean, like, that is like, you know, so beneficial to a campaign like President Obama's because, you know, last month they had a $5,000 ticket Obama fundraiser in New York's Rubin Museum hosted by the singer Ricky Martin, who is still living in La Vida Loca, and the museum's founders and Donald and Shelley Rubin. They raised $1 million. And in March, Michelle Obama held a fundraiser at the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis that netted $90,000. So she needs to step up the pace there a little bit, Michelle.
Hey, $90,000.
Still, you know, blows my mind that the art world and, you know, entertainers in general have gotten behind Barack Obama because, you know, his support for the art world foundered in, since his election. I mean, you know, like in 2010, he proposed consolidating grants programs for education, leaving the arts to completely funding with the science and literary programs, and the National Endowment of Arts funding was cut by $6 million in 2011. Additionally, the administration made questionable appointments to key posts, such as Chicago lawyer Kareem Dale, who was appointed to arts czar, which is kind of bizarre to begin with. Despite having limited art experience, criticism for the art advocates was swift. You know, yet he seems to garnish, you know, all kinds of support from the art world because, once again, he is the cool candidate.
Well, Obama's proposed 2013 arts budget has increased by 5%. And Robert Lynch, who's the president of Americans for the Art, which is a group based in Washington, D.C., as he says, the White House is sending a clear message that it understands the importance of the creative sector to our communities and the economy. Mm. Art has always been really important to me, so I really like the idea of recognizing the creative sector, as he says, of
Absolutely.
Our communities. That means so much to me, and I really like hearing that from someone who's in that role of being connected to politics as well.
Yes.
Right, and then I'm sure you know, President Obama also appreciates the fact that artists have a lot of money. I mean, I don't know, you know, too many people that can afford a $5,000 ticket to the dinner.
Hey, supporting the arts.
Yeah, President Obama, I'm sure, appreciates the fact that a lot of these artists and their enthusiasts, you know, have a lot of money and they can get behind his cause. And I'm sure that there's other presidents that would love to have that kind of backing.
Oh, absolutely. And I know one.
Oh.
I know of one, and I want to share his story.
Oh, do tell.
This is an incredible story. This is an incredible story.
This is an absolutely incredible story. And as Charlie said earlier, it seems almost like a Hollywood thriller. But let's get into the meat of this. When the documentary The Island President made its well-received world premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival in September, its star was a relative unknown. Mohamed Nasheed became the first democratically elected president of the Maldives in 2008, taking over the 1,200-island archipelago in the Indian Ocean after agitating for political reform for more than 20 years. The island president chronicles Nasheed's first year in office, much of which was devoted to combating climate change, someone after my own heart, which for the 400,000 people who have inhabited the low-lying islands for thousands of years is a life and death issue. But since Toronto, much has changed. The waves still lap ominously over the Maldives' pristine coral reefs and silky beaches. But Nasheed left office in February under conditions that he describes as a coup.
Ooh, it makes me want to go there. The silky beaches.
Oh, have you ever seen pictures? It's magnificent.
I saw some pictures and I saw some video. I saw the trailer for the movie, but
stunning trailer.
I didn't even have to be honest with you. I didn't even know it was a real place. This thing is so well put together. I thought it was this is bizarre.
Like you said, science. Hollywood thriller.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's not. It's real life.
It's fascinating.
Well, tell us more about it.
Okay, I will. Nasheed's recent battles, which included a visit to Washington to plead with the State Department's officials to investigate his removal from office, make the island president all the more timely and no less urgent. Filmmaker John Schenck, who shot The Lost Boys of Sudan, expertly weaves Nasheed's extraordinary personal story together with the Maldives' breathtaking natural beauty and a Capra-esque tale of dogged idealism and political courage to create a wonderfully vivid cinematic portrait. The island president is bursting with compelling and sometimes painful contradictions. The film captures the striking tropical terrain that draws wealthy tourists to the Maldives every year, even while it shows viewers the 5x5-foot shed in which Nasheed was imprisoned on one of those same white sand beaches. Wow.
Mm. And that's incredible. You know, I mean, I see he's almost like a, you know, if you take out the environmental part of it, his story sounds, you know, oddly familiar to, like, Nelson Mandela.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Except the ending is a little different.
Right.
The ending of this story. But hopefully it's not completely ended. The man who assumed office at 41 has a slight stature and high-pitched voice of a schoolboy in Sri Lanka and England that he once was. But when brokering a carbon emission agreement at the climate summit in Copenhagen in 2009, he showed sophisticated understanding of how to leverage moral suasion. The reason to see the island president is to meet Nasheed himself, a charismatic, brilliant visionary who now faces serious backlash in his own country. You might walk into the theater not knowing where or what the Maldives are, but you'll walk out caring more than you ever thought you would.
You know, and I think that's going to be so true because just, you know, from seeing the trailer, you know, like I said, you know, I didn't know that this was a country. And by the way, for our listeners, it's, and I know a lot of you out there.
Archipelago.
Are going to say, like, everybody knows where the Maldives are, man. Because, you know, we have a huge audience in India.
And they
that's
might
exactly
be a little more
familiar. Where it is. It's in the Indian Ocean.
Yes.
You know, I really hope, you know, that the people that are in charge of the Rio summits and other summits that will happen as well, you know, pick up that spirit of, like, you know, like R. Kelly spirit of, like, you know, I can believe I can fly, you know, because that's, you know, what we need to happen. We need people to have some enthusiasm. And Maya, you had something about R. Kelly, didn't you?
He certainly does have enthusiasm.
he does.
He does. And he actually worked with veteran writer David Ritz recently and is planning a tell-all autobiography called Sola Coaster, The Diary of Me.
Great title.
Great title.
Sola Coaster. It discloses the untold story of his very controversial career and life. Sola Coaster will detail R. Kelly's conflicting realities of the bump and grind kind of sexuality and his soul-stirring I Believe I Can Fly spirit.
Great song.
Why don't you sing a little couple
sing
bars?
Some first.
Well, you know what? I would, but, you know, this is a family show, kids.
Okay, we'll have to release a video of you doing it later. Well, in the book, R. Kelly details his rise to fame and the fact that he has a learning disorder, which has left him unable to read or write. Who would have known?
You know what? I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, I didn't either. But he still managed to sell over 35 million records.
Okay. That is amazing.
You know what it really is?
That is amazing. He can't read or write, but yet he's a great success.
Yes. It's pretty amazing. It makes me want to read the book.
Absolutely.
The book also details the darkest periods of his life, and it actually almost ruined his career. There was a 6-year ordeal over legal allegations, but he was eventually found innocent of all criminal charges in 2008. But unfortunately, the ordeal may have permanently tarnished his name.
That's too bad.
Hopefully not. Maybe this book will help us see the big picture of who he is.
Good. Right. I hope so.
The chairman and CEO of Epic Records, Antonio L.A. Reed, as he says, in the tradition of legendary soul singer-songwriters, R. Kelly has defined his own unique style of genius while influencing an entire generation of singers. He is the pure essence of soul, and in Sola Coaster, you'll discover the untold story behind every song.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. What a review.
And there are three different acts in this memoir. Act one in the book focuses on the musician's early life on the south side of Chicago. Act two focuses on Kelly's struggle as a homeless musician on Venice Beach, in addition to his rise to fame.
Oh my gosh, I know Venice Beach very well. That was the first place I lived when I first moved to Los Angeles as a young woman.
So did you see R. Kelly?
Oh my gosh, it was quite a while ago.
Yeah, but Venice Beach is quite something. Yeah, that's where I got my muscles.
Oh. Yeah, I have a lot of interesting stories about Venice Beach.
Maybe you'll have to disclose them in your own autobiography.
Yes. I don't know.
In Act 3, R. Kelly discusses the end of his 12-year marriage, as well as the inner workings of his failed Best of Both Worlds tour with Jay-Z. And the singer delves into the infamous pepper spray incident involving Jay-Z, which marked the end of the botched tour. Out in stores at the end of June, Sola Coaster includes over 130 photographs of R. Kelly, who will launch the Sola Coaster book tour. He also has a new 12-song CD collection called Write Me Back that was just released as well.
Oh, nice. You know what? He did a movie called Trapped in the Closet, which is, for all our listeners out there, it was made probably like maybe 5-6 years ago, something like that. And it was a video. He had done a video for one of his songs, and the video was so funny that they did it like a short little movie. Lucia, you do short, so you'd appreciate this. It was like a short, right? And they did the song to it, and it was so good that they people wanted more. So he ended up doing a series of 12 different songs, all tied to the same thing called "Trapped in the Closet," and all in different songs.
Oh, that's a great premise.
And then they made they just spliced them all together and made a movie out of it. And I saw it on IFC. I just, at first I thought it was this incredibly long video, and I was laughing, and then it just kept going on. I was like, oh wow, this is a whole movie. And it's funny because what it is just it's a movie about a guy that comes home to his wife, and she's cheating on him, and he's cheating on her, and the police get involved, and they go down to the discotheque and all sorts of stuff. But the whole thing is sung, and it's a dialogue, and it was like, they call it Trapped in the Closet, because he finds his wife, and there's a guy, and he's in the closet, and he goes, "No, wait a minute, I told you not to open that door." And they all sing their dialogue. It's hysterical.
It's like a little operetta.
It is. It's something like that, done with a soul twist to it, obviously.
Yeah, it was
kind of funny. Yeah, yeah. R. Kelly, he was quite a popular guy in the '90s and this decade as well. He's gotten pretty popular, and he has a lot of fans. And I'm curious, maybe he takes one of those four cities will be in Europe. Maybe
he could
have a lot of followings. Venice Beach, London, England.
Oh well, speaking of London.
Uh huh.
It would be too convenient to bash the opulence and grandeur of the royal wedding that occurred on April 29th, 2011, when Kate Middleton and William, Duke of Cambridge, were wed. Did you see that? Did you watch?
I did watch, because my invitation was obviously lost in the mail somewhere.
And I'm proud to say I did watch. I was enraptured. I guess maybe that's a
you know
a good
I
word.
I you know I have to confess that I think it's great that the world still does things like the coronations and the weddings that they do in England. I just think it sets it sets the tone for everyone that, you know, like, hey, the whole world is not doom and gloom. You know, we do still celebrate love and
exactly. You know?
I remember seeing a shot of when they were up on outside the veranda up on
in Buckingham Palace.
In the palace, yeah. And they were carrying, holding one of the little cousin babies, and the baby was really unhappy, and everyone else was smiling. And I remember.
Oh, she had her hands over the ears.
Yeah, I just thought that was so entertaining. Poor little kid, but.
I think some of the jets were flying over at the time, and she was having a hard time. I think, I don't know. Anyway, it was cute.
Well, I'm glad, you know, that they're having marital bliss, and you know everything is going great. Here we are, a year later, and you know they seem to be doing
all
great.
All is well. The affair was a culmination of months of intense lead-up. Morning shows featured long, drawn-out segments critiquing anything and everything made public about the upcoming nuptials, and actual quote-unquote experts were brought on to weigh in. Kate Middleton, now a princess, is not a rags-to-riches story, yet her influence stretches around the world due to the fact that she married the Prince of Great Britain. The celebration of the current embodiment of the imperial establishment, the British crown, is remarkable, especially in the United States. Possible benefits that come from this union are the continued championing of random state-sponsored charities, or perhaps a progressive decline of the relevance of the crown. But so far, Middleton has jetted around the world looking pretty and reminding everyone that Great Britain is an old, old country that still has a queen. On St. Patrick's Day, however, she even donned a green dress when handling the ceremony of four-leaf clovers to members of the Irish Guard. Her husband was not present, however, as he is still not a member of the Irish Guard. But was a classy political move meant to honor the Irish and promote a progressive union between Ireland, Northern Ireland, and Great Britain?
Yeah, good for her, man.
Yes, I agree. According to the royalist Tom Sykes, the couple spent their anniversary in a hotel that cost only £165 a night. He says this conscious shunning of lavishness is unbecoming of the titled prince and is a disappointment to the embittered British society, not to mention the world, who demand prolific festivities akin to the wedding for which they are celebrating. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I say huzzah to them for spending, you know, a simple first anniversary in a medium-priced hotel. I think it's terrific.
They just know their love is so rich that they don't need to necessarily be spending money.
I think they were probably hoping they'd run into Russell Brand.
You know, what I really like about them is that, you know, they have this opulence at their fingertips, but yet they choose to live simply. And I think it's a great role model for the young people of the world. I still personally like the royalty, and I like everything that it stands for. It's fun to watch. It's fun to witness. But I really like what they stand for.
Yeah. Well, you know, well, congratulations to Billy and Kate. And, you know, well, they'll be checking in at a Motel 6 near you soon.
Well, speaking of London, I actually didn't know this, being a total West Coast girl, but there is a place called New London, and it's in Connecticut.
You know, and that's remarkable. They also have a New York and a New Jersey. What's with all the new stuff?
And a New Ashland.
Yeah.
Right. And on July 6th through 9th, coming up, when Op Sale 2012 Connecticut blows in, you're going to want to actually be there, since it's not just a parade of tall ships. The celebration is in New London and the neighboring East Lyme, and the ships are coming from as far away as Brazil. It will be Connecticut's largest tourist event of the decade. Well, the last Op Sale celebrated the new millennium, and this year it's celebrating the 200th anniversary of the War of 1812. Which had its first shots fired in New London. John S. Johnson.
I did not know that.
I did not know that either. And this is a great way that they're helping us to get a little taste of history.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
John S. Johnson, who's the chairman of Op Sale Connecticut, he pointed out that this whole region from Stonington to Essex in that area played a huge role in the war. As he says, all the shipbuilding industry was burned to the ground. And the 27 ships that were destroyed by the British in their raid represented the U.S.'s greatest loss in a single naval incident until Pearl Harbor later. Johnson said, "We are the last port in a national celebration organized by Operation Sail and the United States Navy, and we are very proud participants in this significant national celebration." Mm. And there are actually four port events earlier this year. This is the last one. They started with New Orleans in April, and so they're hoping to make this one the most spectacular.
Lavish.
Right. Yeah, and it makes sense, too, because, you know, they were one of the original 13 colonies.
Well, the OPSAIL 2012 Connecticut is going to be very entertaining, and they're going to have live bands, encampments. They're going to have historical reenactments.
There you go, Charlie.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I can finally dust off my own uniform.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And they're going to...
You know, epaulets are coming back, man.
Yeah, he's wearing one now for those listeners who can't see.
Right. I used to have two, but, you know, well, there was that incident. and you know, we don't talk about it much anymore. Yeah. Damn Molly and Dolly Madison. You
know. There are also going to be fireworks, and the Coast Guard band is going to be playing prior to the fireworks.
All right.
So the public is invited to visit and tour the tall ships over the weekend, and there are going to be free tours on board.
Love it. Hey, you know, you girls ever wonder where that song came from? It came from an artist named Bill Baird. He wrote that song, and it's called Why No Strut.
I remember him.
Yeah, and you know, he recently went to...
That's our theme song.
It is.
I've heard it before.
He went to India, and he's from Austin, Texas. He has, you know, many, many, many great recordings, and we were really, really fortunate, you know, to... talked to Bill, and he sent us a recording that he made himself. I don't want to tell you too much about it because it's really trippy. And Bill recorded it. Yeah, he recorded it himself. I believe he recorded it in India, I'm pretty sure he did record it in India because he asked us to send him the questions and he would take it from there. And so I think you're really going to enjoy it. You can check out Bill, and he has a blog called Bill Baird. And of course, he's on justimagineitinc.com. Enjoy it. He's great. You guys all remember his album Sunset. And, you know, he's played everywhere. So I really don't need to say too much about him. But enjoy the interview and have fun with it, because I know I had fun with it as well.
Bill, your music is always changing styles. Do you find yourself changing as time goes on in any special direction?
It's difficult to predict where I will go next, and I like it that way. Everything is in reaction to what came previous. A celebration of the ephemeral and the spontaneous. I find my interests diverging in an almost schizophrenic manner.
We love your videos. Some are quite humorous, and some are surreal. Which do you enjoy making the most?
What? My videos are funny. Am I some sort of joke to you? What? Are you trying to insult me? I am hoping to make it in the biz, the big glittery biz, and your unfair harsh criticisms will harm my chances in my quest for the best.
Your blog is great, and the messages from you are very well written. Is there a book inside of you?
Yes. I ate a book for breakfast this morning. It was very difficult to chew, so I boiled it. It is called Optimum Health by Dr. Andrew Weil. He is a fat, bearded, smiling New Age guru who tells people what to eat.
China, how is the trip going?
I did not go to China. I went to India. It ended a few months back. It was a total mindfuck.
What are you working on for the future?
I am moving to Oakland to be a DA at Mills College. I have many albums yet to be released, some orchestral, some raw, some complete shite.
Where would like to see yourself in the years to come?
Hopefully I won't be dead anytime soon. If the universe sees it fit to keep me around, I will continue making a joyful noise. I want a mohawk and a faux hawk. I will never eat meat again. I will continue putting off exercising until someday I will have a middle-aged punch belly, and I will regret that decision. I will continue drinking coffee, even after I am dead. I will do my best to be open-minded, except if something sucks. I will keep scraping myself off the floor and coming back for another round. I will camp in pristine redwood forest. I will start smoking a pipe and scratching my chin a lot and wondering why I always look like I am thinking too hard about something. I will bathe naked in natural spring water. I will write a cookbook about frozen meals. I will thank the universe for every second granted to me. Ja Rasta.
Yes.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Blackstone's special feature.
Finding his father's porno tapes helped launch Andrew Goffman's comedy career. He shared his humorous musings with one of our New York correspondents, Chrissy McIntyre.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting edition of Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. I'm Chrissy McIntyre. I had the pleasure of talking to Andrew Goffman, who's the writer and star of the off-Broadway hit The Accidental Pervert. Andrew toured the country as a comedian and now performs every weekend at the 13th Street Repertory Theater in New York City. As you can probably guess from the title, The Accidental Pervert, the show has some racy material, but Andrew is instantly likable and delivers his performance with such honesty and charm, it's hard to be offended. My conversation with Andrew took many twists and turns. He's very funny, and we had each other laughing at even the most inane topics, like naming state capitals. You can find out, too. He greets everyone after each of his performances. In fact, he may even greet you during his show. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show. You wrote this show.
I did.
When did you write the show?
I started in 2003 writing the show. And it took me a couple years. And then when I finished the show, I wasn't totally finished yet. And I entered a festival. I tried to get in and I got accepted.
Oh.
And the show wasn't done yet.
Oh.
And I was that'll get you.
That'll get you writing quickly.
It does, yeah. Because I had 1 month to go.
Okay.
And no ending.
Well, for our listeners, just give us a quick little synopsis of what they could expect when they go to see The Accidental Pervert.
It's about a boy who stumbles onto his father's collection of videotapes that he hid in his closet.
So his tapes of North by Northwest.
Yes,
and
the building of the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was,
yeah,
yes.
Rocky. There were some other tapes in there, too.
There were other tapes.
Yeah.
They didn't look like the same covers as Disney has.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little different.
A little different.
And but some of them sounded similar to the Disney titles.
Like?
I don't know, like Sleeping Booty.
Oh, Sleeping Booty.
Sleeping Booty, yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Pocahontas.
Oh, I see.
Throbbing Wood.
Oh.
Am I allowed to say that?
I don't know. So you stumbled upon your father's porn tapes.
I did, yes.
At the age of, the tender age of...
10?
10.
Yeah.
10.
I was 10, which nowadays isn't such a big deal.
Really?
I don't think so.
10?
My neighbor said his son went to a sleepover and he came home and he said, Dad... We were watching the computer, and this, once again,
well, they don't have
their
parental controls.
Right, yeah.
So you found the tapes.
I found the tapes. In
your dad's closet. And you just started watching them up until the age of...
Yeah. I mean, those next 4 years,
and
just every second I could. Okay. The second I saw the tapes in the closet, I ran over to the VCR as fast as I could. I put them in. I started watching, and it just changed my life. I started to look at people differently.
Right.
Like, we had a cleaning lady. We had a cleaning lady come once a week since I was born.
Yeah.
Because both my parents worked, they weren't home, and the cleaning lady would clean.
Clean.
And she'd even cook dinner for me if they came home late.
But, and you had fantasies about this woman.
I did, but not until I saw the videos. I never thought of her that way.
Right.
Just nice little, you know, cleaning lady. Nettie. She was great. She's like a family member. I loved her.
Right.
And then I watched Laid Service.
Oh,
and this cleaning lady goes into the boss's bedroom and starts making wild, passionate love to him. And I was thinking, wow, we have a cleaning lady. Why don't I make my room messy? Let me get naked and hide under the covers like this guy did. And I'll just try to get her in. I made the room messy to be like bait. I was like, Nettie!
This is actually on stage. You actually perform this whole idea out on stage. What is it like performing these sort of fantasies and thoughts and telling people this whole aspect of your personality. You're very forthcoming with a lot of this information.
Well, the show, it is a comedy, mm-hmm. and it is, there's a lot of jokes and it's funny, mm-hmm. but it is also, it's honest and it's my story, yeah. and it's true. And I feel like a lot of times when you get really specific, and that really brings out a generalization mm-hmm. that everybody can relate to.
What does your mom think about hearing about your life at home?
Oh, she's disowned me.
Yeah.
We don't speak anymore. She has actually come to the show twice.
Okay.
They're the two toughest shows I've had to do. And I told her, I said, just don't sit up front.
Yeah.
So she sat in the back row.
Put her in the hot seat.
So, no.
Oh, that would have been really... Oh, she's a nice, sweet woman yeah. that doesn't deserve this.
So I want to ask you about people's experiences, because my personal experience was to make really stupid jokes, like sex jokes, like what the kind I would make when I was 12. Do you find that people are like, talk silly to you, or say really stupid things to you, or is that just me? Or do they just confess to you? What happens to you after the show?
Yeah, both. They do both.
Okay.
They confess to me.
Mm-hmm.
The guys are like, yo, dude, that was my story up there.
Oh,
I was
God.
Like, cool.
What does it say?
My cousin came and saw the show, mm-hmm. and the second he came with my other cousin, one was female, one was male, and the second the female went up to go to the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
he like confessed all this stuff to me. He's like, oh my, when you talked about this one and that one, can I say, he said he saw Saturday Night Beaver also.
Oh, right.
And he was telling
a classic.
Me, yeah. He's telling me all about it.
Yeah.
And then 2 minutes later, or I don't know, 5 minutes later, she's coming out of the bathroom, and then boop, yep. Back
Saturday,
there.
What? What was that
the
movie?
Weather.
Yeah.
Even from people from the West Coast.
Yeah.
And, like, from the South.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
So you have a like, real following around the country.
Well, I mean, people have come to the show, like, mm-hmm. from Alaska and from, like, Birmingham, Alabama. Okay. And, yeah, it's like, there's been people from all over.
Yeah.
And, yeah, even other countries.
Because, I mean, you're a very nice person. You're very warm and genuine. So, and you're, like, very honest on stage. So, personally, I felt like, oh, I could tell you anything. Because you just told me so much about you. I could say anything. And also, now I'm, like, a little kid, and I'm going to say stupid jokes.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, that's how I felt. But that's how I felt. But I was wondering if a lot of people, like, what other people thought.
I mean, I'm not the smartest person in the world.
Okay.
So, they figure they can tell me some things
mm-hmm.
that they normally wouldn't tell someone that graduated from Harvard.
Right.
I'm dyslexic.
Okay.
Is
that real?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is. And I'm a bad
That's
speller.
That's serious.
And yeah. And so it always like made me self-conscious, or I had a loss of confidence. I would like spell things and just hope that the like computer spell guess would like I'd spell it close enough so they'd actually make a guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it would always come back like, sorry, no guess.
Yeah, we have no idea.
And I just like changed the letters around a little. I'm like, please just guess. Oh, try anything you say. It'll be better than what I wrote.
So you are a little self-conscious. Is that why you want to be on stage? Is that why you're...
I guess
Is
I
that
always,
like your defense mechanism?
Yeah,
like,
it was talking. Because yeah. I wasn't going to like spell it.
Right, you weren't going to write stuff out.
No,
so how did you write this show?
Took a while.
Help. Is that why it took 5 years?
Like, yeah, pretty much. It started with my stand-up. And I started turning my stand-up. And what happened to me in real life. And I tweaked it and I put like my story together.
Yeah.
And I did some stand-up, and I went around the country.
Right.
And I worked on it. And
did you get to the West Coast?
Yeah, I did. I went to Sacramento.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is that the capital?
It is.
The California?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know my capitals. Ask me Montana. Go ahead. Ask me.
What's
Helena?
The capital? North Dakota.
Bismarck.
Nice. South Dakota.
Pierre.
Nebraska.
Oh, what is that one? Nebraska.
Is
Omaha.
It president. No.
It's not. Lincoln.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Lincoln,
all
Nebraska.
Right. Should we do this for the whole podcast?
No, it's boring.
Topeka.
Boring is all get out. It's Kansas.
Lansing.
It's Michigan. This
Toledo.
Is so dull. Stop. Ohio.
Man.
So, you said that a lot of people, guys come up to you and say, like, this is my story.
Dude,
this is my story.
Yeah, you left the dude out.
What do you say to guys that don't watch porn movies? Have you ever met anybody that doesn't?
I haven't.
Really?
No. Yes. You know what? There are people that cannot relate to this show at all.
Yeah.
But they watch me up there, and what usually happens is they're like, you know what? I can tell this guy is being honest.
Yeah.
And because he's being honest, I'm going to go there with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to trust, you know, where he takes us, that he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
And I think they see me up there, and I do know what I'm talking about when it comes to this subject.
You cover all the bases.
I do. I've met people that really shouldn't have been there because they're offended.
Of course.
And they leave. I've also met people that are like total, like, they walk around with a trench coat, and they're like total perverts.
No.
And they're upset because it's not some hardcore perverted show. It's a play. It's a comedy. And it's got a beginning, a middle, an end. Mm-hmm. It's got a nice arc with a climax.
Oh. You had to do it.
And I leaned in.
You did.
And some people get upset that there's not more visuals and there's not more stuff to see.
Right. Well, you can't please everyone.
You can't. But
and in your case, you're really only trying to please yourself anyway, so.
Right, which I do.
Yeah.
At the very beginning of the show, in the first scene. Which is very nice. In my Lazy Boy chair. We've had everything go wrong that could go wrong.
Yeah.
The chandelier stopped working, the light for the TV, the everything.
Oh,
but you just got to keep going.
You got to keep going.
I have gone backstage, in show, told people to just hold on a second, talk amongst themselves, and plug things back in.
Right.
I have reset dimmers.
Right.
I have fuses. I am an electrician now. I could get my license.
You could.
Yes.
Well, the thing is about your show that I don't think people probably would know. When you go to a show, you don't expect to talk to the performer. You really encourage a lot of audience participation.
Well, yeah, but not for you to call me a bastard. In the middle. That's actually our first conversation. It was in show. You were sitting there. You're like third row aisle.
Yeah.
Great. And then you nice smile and you called me a bastard.
I did call you a bastard.
I didn't know that we would be having this interview at the time.
You're just like, wow, that jerk.
Yeah.
Thanks. You threw me off.
Much.
So you can see the audience. I mean, you know when they're laughing and you know when they're, you know.
Yeah.
Nervous, because certain people are nervous, I'm sure, with the material. So you can feel all that.
Yeah, there's some people that are very playful. They want to play along,
right.
And you play along with them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain people that if you look at them, they start to twitch.
Right.
And you kind of, like, leave them alone, because you want them to enjoy it, too.
Of course.
I love telling the story, and I love to see people come and have a good time.
So your show is, since you encourage audience participation, your show doesn't stay the same every night. It must be different, right?
It is different.
And are you ad-libbing lines, or does the line stay the same, and just the stuff that you do with the audience is different?
I have the basic, like, outline, the shell. I have to stick in a certain order, because there's so many cues.
Right.
In stand-up, it's different. You could tell a story and just go completely off to another story and come back again, do whatever you want. But I have a bunch of sound cues that are going to be coming up.
Yeah, because there's a lot of lights, because you're working with your director, Charles Messina. Charles Messina.
Yes,
is up in the tech booth, and as you're talking, there's a lot of different visual come on and stage.
He does it all.
Yeah.
He does the
and
lights
audio
are manual
cues.
And there's audio cues and there's videos.
Yeah.
And he is up there doing all of those things.
Yeah,
and
it's great.
There's like things like spraying out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, bring your umbrella. You definitely want to have that.
Yes. And by the way, Charles is an excellent director. I'm so happy that we got
to work with
each other. Because a lot of times you have the show and then you want to work with someone, you want to get a director. And you just, like, it's almost like jumping into a relationship. How often is it you just jump in with someone and you don't even really know him, and just everything works out.
Right.
And he's, like, the same age as me. He's got a kid. He's got a boy. I have a girl. Same age. And it's, like, his father passed away at a young age.
Oh, wow.
Mine did. I don't want to ruin the story here. But, we had, like, so much in common. And, he's really great to work with. And he's doing a lot of other stuff.
How long has the show been running?
This is our third year.
Third year. So now you've licensed the show. It's being performed in Argentina.
I did, yes.
And now, coming up, they want to do a part two.
They do.
So you are going to be a busy bunny this summer.
Yeah, but we also got some emails, some inquiries from other countries that want to do the show.
Wow.
And
you're going to be a multinational.
Yeah. It's weird because we're just, you know, in this little small off-Broadway theater here.
Yeah.
I got an email from Poland.
Yeah.
From Germany.
Wow.
You know, like Berlin, some biker bar. By the way, the show in Argentina is doing great.
Great.
They're not just in Buenos Aires anymore. They're now going to other towns and cities. And we got some emails from people that want to license the show. They want to do it in Brazil.
Oh my gosh.
And in Malta. And somebody just saw it from Panama. Wow. They were there from Panama last weekend, and they saw it. And they were talking about doing it.
So somebody up from Panama was in New York and saw your show.
Yeah, which is what happened with Argentina.
Yeah.
They saw the show in New York. They stayed after and they talked to me, and then we did a licensing agreement. Wow. Not like all that night.
Yeah, but still, that's awesome.
Called up a friend of mine.
It's amazing, you just put something out there and things happen.
Yeah.
You're just putting yourself out there, Andrew.
Yeah.
Friday and Saturday nights in New York City.
Yeah. XLPerfect.com, 7 p.m.
7 p.m. Thank you so much, Andrew, for chatting with us.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. This has been another exciting edition of Get Behind Me, Now Stay There.
For more information about Andrew Goffman's Accidental Pervert Show, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com. Adele Park has found success in the audiobook world with her company Straight to Audio Productions. She talked to Cyrus Emerson about the book that won the Audi Award for Best Multi-Voiced Performance, Jitters.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, we're speaking with Adele Park. How are you doing today, Adele?
Well, hi there, Cyrus. It's wonderful to be a guest on your program.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about your audiobook, Jitters, which is pretty popular.
Well, I am an indie audio producer, and I've got a little studio in St. George, Utah, and I produce quirky little audiobooks. And the one that I am currently promoting is called When Radio and Polygamy Collide, Jitters, a Quirky Little Audiobook. This is a multi-voice performance, something that you, Cyrus, are familiar with because that's the format that you use for your own audiobook called Lost Angel. But in my audiobook, I've got it narrated by a series of newscasts with the characters reacting to the news events of the day. So it's a little bit different in that the narration's through a newscast. And it's about a radio shock jock named Nancy Neptune who goes to work at a station near a polygamous compound in Utah. And naturally, she can't resist stirring up trouble with the natives, and much cosmic merriment ensues.
I bet. Yeah, there's two friends of Nancy. One is a one-armed reporter, and the other is a drag queen. It's kind of an oddball crew. How'd you come up with that?
I came up with a cast of wacky characters and then put them in these very extreme situations and then tried to see what would happen. And I tried to let the characters speak for themselves. And so these characters speak in first-person narratives, and they tell you their little story. And sometimes it doesn't always jive with what the other characters are saying. And oftentimes you learn about the other characters through gossip that whoever's speaking is passing along about someone else. So it's kind of just these ongoing, almost, a stream of mind awareness type dialogues where they're just sort of rattling off these stories to you. After the newscast airs, then they tell you their reaction to it.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. So they're all working in the same newsroom together, I gather.
Well, Sandy Wyman, the one-armed reporter, works with Nancy Neptune. Our drag queen is named Jackie Wu, and she comes in later in the story. She doesn't actually work for the radio station. But what happens is, throughout this story, we are talking about this ongoing rift between the citizens in Naval and their polygamous neighbors in Zion Flats. And in the end, Nancy Neptune and her friends befriend one of the polygamists from this compound, and he turns out to be mentally challenged, and they realize that he's being abused by one of his nine mommies and neglected by the other eight. So they decide they're going to step in and rescue him, and in the end, the whole town sort of gets involved. And it's just kind of a quirky little setup, you know? You never really know what's going to happen.
Right. And so I guess you wrote this for audiobook only, right? You skipped the publishing industry altogether. You didn't write a book. You just wrote this for audio, right?
Well, I'll relay a little story that all of the listeners in your audience who are writers probably can relate to. When I tried to get this manuscript published as a book, I couldn't ever get anyone in the publishing industry interested in my stuff because I didn't have an agent. And I couldn't get an agent because I'd never been published. So after a while, I took all these manuscripts I had written just for fun, and I basically just put them on the shelf and left them there for a long time. And after some soul searching, I asked myself, well, why did I really want to publish these to begin with? And it was never that I actually wanted them to be in print. It was that I wrongly assumed that in order to have an audiobook, you must first have a physical book.
Right.
And when I realized that there was no rule that said you had to do that, it was sort of like a supreme aha moment for me. And then I'm like, okay, I'll go straight to audio. So that's the name of my company, Straight to Audio Productions. I formed a little LLC. I did my first audiobook as an experimental audiobook. I used nothing but a mic, a mixer, and a laptop. And I recorded an 8.5-hour audiobook.
What book was
that? I was encouraged by that. And then when that was all over, said and done, I built a little studio and I recorded Jitters.
What book was that, the first book that you recorded?
It was an early version of an audiobook that I'm going to release at the end of this summer. The manuscript has been rewritten and reworked, and the whole thing has been recorded now in my studio, as opposed to the mic, the mixer, and the laptop situation.
Uh-huh.
We have an actual studio now. So this project is called When Marijuana and Reality TV Collide. Yikes, another quirky audiobook.
Yeah.
Now, this particular story is about, it's still set in the same town, fictitious town in southern Utah, Naval, Utah. They have the polygamous neighbors in Zion Flats, also part of the action.
Okay.
But this particular story involves a hemp grower named Blue McKenna who gets involved in a reality TV show.
Huh. Sounds like something that could happen in Oregon.
Yes, or Boulder, Colorado, where
right.
my hometown is.
Right.
So I guess Ashland and Boulder could be sister cities.
There you
now,
go.
In my story, I do have a sister city. My fictitious town is called Naval, and its sister city is Levan, L-E-V-A-N, which is Naval spelled backwards. And coincidentally, there just happens to be a town in Utah called Levan. Now, when you see the sign, L-E-V-A-N, you might mistakenly think Levan, but it's not. It's Levan.
Okay. Yeah, I was also wondering about Naval. When I looked it up on Google Map, it showed a place, or it had a destination, which was right next to Salt Lake. So I was looking at that, and I saw St. George, you know, where your Straight to Audio Productions is at, and it looked like 4 hours north. So I was wondering what the whole attraction was there, but I guess it's just a fictitious town that you made up.
Naval is more a state of mind than it is an actual location. But one thing that really did happen, in my story I talk about this oasis where all these really cosmic things happen. In Jitters, that's kind of where the polygamists stash their kids that come out of the oven on the doughy side. So it's kind of a burial ground in book one. But in book two, that's where you can find some very hellacious weed, which Blue McKenna is desperately trying to keep the castmates of Yikes away from. But anyway, that's a whole separate story, which comes out at the end of the summer. But I did have some friends who, after hearing Jitters, some people I ride ATVs with said, hey, you know that oasis in your story? Well, we found it, and it's pretty much in the location you said it was in. And I'd never been out there. So we went out there. This particular oasis is all Joshua trees, so it's a little different than the one described in my story. So I guess the point is, you just never know.
Right. So, you know, you got this book out, you know, it's been getting good publicity. In fact, it was featured on Jimmy Fallon's show on his Do Not Read list. How did that make you feel?
Oh, I was delighted. I thought that was the funniest bit. I was so grateful to Jimmy Fallon for doing that. It was wonderful.
Did he contact you at all beforehand?
No, actually, I submitted my own title as a joke because that's kind of how my sense of humor works anyway. And I love Jimmy Fallon, and I love his Do Not Read list. So just as a joke, I submitted my own title. And I never thought he would pick it, but he did. And then I thought, great. And I love the clip that he played on the air. I thought that was hilarious.
It was. Yeah, I was watching that.
And if anyone in your audience hasn't seen it, they can go to my website at www.jittersaudiobook.com. And we have that on there, as well as a lot of other things. If you want to kind of get an idea of what my polygamous characters might look like, you can click on our video. Also on our website, you can listen to a free 12-minute trailer, which gives you a soundbite from all of the major characters in Jitters. So try before you buy. Also on that website, it will take you to a page where you can buy it in any format you want, whether you want to buy it as a physical product from Amazon.com or as an MP3 download from Audible.com or Barnes & Noble or any number of other sites as well.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun, and we encourage all of our listeners out there to do that. If you get a chance, definitely check that out. Your book, Jitters, won the Audi Award.
What we won was multi-voiced performance. So it was for the multi-voice performance. We had some, you know, just awesome competition. I don't know what the criteria was used to judge this particular contest, so we were just as surprised as everybody else when Jitters won. In fact, I was so sure that there was an Oscar Wilde that was in there. The Importance of Being Earnest was one of the finalists in that category, and
right.
I was so certain that they would win that on the way to the Audi ceremony, I stopped by the billboard for that particular play that was showing on Broadway, The Importance of Being Earnest. And I had my husband photograph me next to it because I thought, yeah, I think these are the people that are going to win tonight. I mean, so like I said, everybody was a little bit surprised when they called our name.
The Audi Award is a very distinguished award. In the audiobook industry, winning an Audi is the same as an Oscar. So that is, you know, winning an Audi is quite an accomplishment.
Well, we were so honored to be there. Let me tell you, it was really awesome. And the Audio Publishers Association put on a lovely event, and it was just a lot of fun. My husband and I went out there for a couple of days and had some fun in New York. And, of course, while we were there, we did see a Broadway play, and we were lucky enough to get to see Book of Mormon before. It was during that Audi's ceremony, that time frame, when they announced all the Tony nominations. So that was back in the days when you could still get a ticket to Book of Mormon. So we got to see that while we were there. So it was just an awesome trip.
Right. And that was made by the makers of South Park, right?
It was. Trey Parker and Matt Stone. So if you like that kind of humor, if you can maybe take a satirical viewpoint on polygamy, then you would probably like Jitters because we're kind of in that sort of edgy vein where we're doing satire and trying to talk about real issues but still be funny about it.
And
hopefully we're funny. I wouldn't say we're as funny as Trey Parker and Matt Stone, but we're definitely they're setting the bar for us, and that's where we're trying to aim.
Yeah, South Park has definitely taken off, and you know, it's a household name around the country. Everybody knows that show. So the book is available on jittersaudiobook.com.
That's www.jittersaudiobook.com, www.jittersaudiobook.com, and there you can read about all of the cast members. You can see Jimmy Fallon's clip. You can learn about the Audi. And also, you can shop around as to the cheapest way to buy it or the best way for you personally to buy it, because we have links to all the sites where it's available.
All right. Well, that's great, Adele. Thanks so much for being on our show today.
Thank you so much. It was really fun to be on Get Behind Me. Now stay there.
To learn more about Adele Park, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
faces of the scene. Between cracking pavements come shoots of green. Life
available from Blackstone Audio this month, the John Edwards affair made headlines for years. One of the biggest political scandals of all time. A fall from grace, a modern-day tragedy. It's a story that has been reported, distorted, and spun over and over again by the media, by political aides, by the U.S. government, and by supposed friends. There is, however, someone who actually knows the truth, someone who lived it from day one, the woman at the heart of the story itself, Rial Hunter. In what really happened, Hunter offers an extremely personal account of her relationship with John Edwards. The facts of how they actually met, how their accidental love affair started and escalated, and what it was like to fall in love with a married man who decided to run for president. The surprise of becoming pregnant during the campaign, how the affair became public, the extensive cover-up, and finally, what happened in the years after Edwards publicly admitted to being the father of their daughter, Frances Quinn.
What is Andrew doing? Fred said Andrew all but said directly that I was the father of your baby. Stop screaming at me. I didn't talk to Fred, nor do I have any interest in your anger. We hung up. This happened somewhere between January 7th and 11th. It was at the Four Seasons Resort in Santa Barbara, right before we moved into the big beige house. I believe Fred had no idea what the truth was when he offered to help us get out of North Carolina. Nor do I believe he was doing it to follow Johnny's instructions. I believe Fred was telling the truth when he publicly said that in August 2008. I also believe Fred did not think that his financial help was a campaign violation. The Fred I knew would have never knowingly violated a campaign finance law. I believe Fred helped because that's what Fred did. He helped people. In fact, Fred continued helping me way after Johnny's political career was long over. Also around that time, I found a doctor I trusted. I was still in a great deal of pain. I wasn't moving much, just to the tub and back, and spent a minimum of 5 hours a day soaking. My doctor had a great sense of humor. Naturally, because I was now living under an alias, I had no medical records, so he had to redo all my blood work. He asked me in a very jovial manner, "Who are you running from? The dad?" "Nope," I replied, smiling without offering an answer. He handed me a copy of all my blood work and said, "Well, here, you might need this in case you run away from me before your baby comes out." The other great thing about being back in California, the land of the free, wacky, and celebrity, is that when you fill out your medical forms, there is a line for your legal name, and then next to it a line for your AKA. Of course, I wasn't about to write Rial Hunter. As much as I liked my doctor, it seemed unwise to trust anyone with my real name right now. I listed only Jaya James.
Rial Hunter has been writing since 1993 and has studied meditation, yoga, Eastern philosophies. What Really Happened is her first book. She has one daughter, Frances Quinn. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to blackstoneaudio.com.
Something you are not quite sure of.
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Lucia Sherman.
And I'm Charlie Stanton. You know, and we'd love to hear from you, so join us on our Facebook page at Just Imagine Inc. Or, you know, check us out on our YouTube channel, which is Just Imagine Inc. as well, and you can see some hilarious videos. Be sure to leave a comment if you'd like. And we want to thank you all for listening. So in the meantime, don't forget to get behind me.
Now stay there.
And all that you want. want is to stop holding back, and you wonder when your life is going to start. It's all